Wanted to start tonight with chat that really follows up on something that we were discussing in the post-Shir Hak last time. And it's really a mind-blowing pshat from Rav Schwab. We've been discussing a lot about the personality of the Shvatim and just trying to understand a cohesive storyline. And what's interesting is in Perek Mem Hei Pasuk Chav Vav, right, page 256, we're in Parshas Vayigash, the big reveal happened. Yosef revealed himself to his brothers, and then he tells the brothers, go up to our father, right? So it happens, Perek Chav Hei, Vaya'alu Mimitzrayim, Vayavu Eretz Kanan, El Yaakov Avihim. The brothers go up from Egypt, they come to Eretz Kanan, to their father Yaakov. Pasuk Chavav, ve'yagidu lo le'mar, od Yosef chai v'chihu Moshe b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. And they told him, saying that your son Yosef, that Yosef is still alive, and he is the ruler over all of Egypt, ve'yafeg libo, and his heart grew faint, his heart dropped, ki lo hem in lahem, he didn't believe them. So there's a number of reasons he didn't believe them. You know, one, what do you mean? The ruler of Egypt? You told me this ruler of Egypt was the one that imprisoned Shimon. This ruler of Egypt was the one that wanted to see your brother. This ruler of Egypt is the one that spoke so harshly to you, right, in Parshas Miketz, and telling me all these bad things about this guy. But second, in the Avos Rebbe Nasan, which is a version of Pirkei Avos, Ethics of the Fathers from the school of Rebbe Nasan, in the 30th chapter, it quotes a statement of Rebbe Shimon. That Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that part of the punishment of a liar is that he is or she is never believed. That's part of the punishment of a liar, that no one believes them. And in fact, it is also a Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, Peites Amud Beis, but it talks about it in the context of a different story in Bereishis. We won't get into that context. But over here, Rabbi Shimon, the Avos Rabbi Nasan, is telling us that look at what happened to the brothers. They came to their father. They said, look at the coat of your son, Yosef. Look at this blood. Look what happened. Right? So we know they're liars. So now when they tell their father the truth, lohem min lohem, he doesn't believe them. And the brothers realize that they're caught. The brothers realize that, you know, we told our father all these lies. You know, our ability to tell him truth has been compromised. He can't hear it from us. Even when it is true, so they realize there's only one thing to do. And this is really shocking. Rav Schwab says, what do they do? What's the next pasuk? Pasuk Chav Zayin, Vayidabru Elov es kol divrei Yosef asher diber aleihem. He told them, they told him, they told Yaakov, kol divrei Yosef. What's kol divrei Yosef asher diber aleihem? What are all the words that Yosef spoke to them? What did Yosef say to them? What did Yosef say to them? Ani Yosef achichem asher mechartem osi Mitzrayim. Rav Schwab says, you know what the brothers told Yaakov to get him to believe them? Talk about the big reveal. They told Yaakov what happened. According to Rav Schwab, the brothers, to get Yaakov to believe them, told him, we sold Yosef. We're the reason Yosef was there in the first place. And then, Vayares Agalos, because that is Kol Divrei Yosef. Because, what do you mean, told him all the words of Yosef? What were all the words of Yosef? Look in the Pasuk. All the words of Yosef. Exactly what it sounds like, according to Rav Schwab. Don't dice and splice. Just say, what are Divrei Yosef? Divrei Yosef are, Ani Yosef Achicham Asher Mechartem Asim Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim Mevata Al Teotzu Vayichar Beinichem, Ki Mechartem Asihein, Ki Lemichish Shalachani Elikim Lefneichem. And then, Vayares Agalos Asher Shalach Yosef Laseso So. And then Yaakov saw the wagons, Vatachirach Yaakov Avihem. So we know there's a very interesting medrash, that why did he send the wagons? What was the sign of the wagons? Right. That was the last thing they learned together. The agalos, wagons, is a play of word of what mitzvah? the last thing they were learning together, which was Egla Arufa. Egla, not from the expression of a wagon, Agala, but what's Egla? A calf. The Egla Arufa, it's an interesting law. What's the law of Egla Arufa? When a murder victim is found between two cities, you measure which city it's closer to, and then the elders of that city, the leaders of the city that it's closest to, have to come and bring this sacrifice to say what? Yadenu lo shafchu es adam. We didn't spill this blood. And the pasuk, they beseech God, Kaperna, please forgive us. The message of the Egla Arufa isn't merely that this was the last topic we were learning, but Yosef was sending the message to Yaakov that what? That what's the message of the Egla Arufa? Don't hold them responsible. Don't hold the elders responsible. And that was the message that Yosef was sending to Yaakov. That's when the message makes sense. Once the brothers tell Yaakov, it's called the Rei Yosef, that Asher Mechartem Osi L'Mitzrayma, the brothers revealed to Yaakov that we sold Yosef, but Yosef is not holding it against us. And then that was the message of the agalos, the message of the wagons, is a hint to this mitzvah of Egla Arufa. And it's really fascinating because we've always wondered, again, we were discussing that at the end of last year. When does Yaakov find out? Does Yaakov never find out? We know there are pshatim that say that Yosef was never alone with his father for all the years that Yaakov was in Egypt. Why? Because he was afraid of what question? What happened to you? Where were you? And Yosef didn't want to tell him. The brothers, Rav Schwab's pshat says that you don't have to go to such a far extent to say he was never alone with his father. According to Rav Schwab, the brothers told him right away. The brothers told Yaakov right away. And it's a very different reading of the story. I mean, it's a question you have to ask. It's one of those questions in Bereishis, like, okay, wonderful, happy family reunion. What does Yaakov think? Does Yaakov not find out what happens? And again, that's what the Medrash is struggling with, this Medrash that Yosef never said, and he never wanted to be asked by his father straight out. What, and Yaakov never asked because he was never alone with Yosef? Like, again, it's not smooth, it's not glatt, it's not smooth, but according to Rav Schwab here, he removes a lot of those questions. And that's the whole idea that he couldn't believe the brothers, because what they're saying the first time, you know, you told me there's the coat, bloody, this and that, like no one's walking away from that. Now you're telling me Yosef's in Egypt and he's the ruler, this ruler that was creating such a hard time for you. What is going on? It doesn't make any sense. But then when they say, es kol divrei Yosef, when they say, listen, Dad, we got to tell you something. We actually threw Yosef in a pit to sell him as a slave to Egypt. Then all of a sudden, all the pieces start to fit in for Yaakov Avinu. They all start to come to make sense. And that's what, according to Rav Schwab, is going on between Yaakov and his sons, and ultimately, how to really understand the rest of Sefer Bereishis. And we don't have that question because it was taken care of right away in the very, very beginning. Okay, so that's just something I thought is very important for understanding just the basic story of how to understand. And again, that is a little bit of a chiddush from Rav Schwab. You know, again, there are certainly authorities who say that it was never really revealed to Yaakov Avinu what happened with Yosef. Rav Schwab says, no, that's not the case. Okay, so let's move to the last pasuk in the parsha, page 266, from 256 to 266, and then we'll move a little bit earlier, we'll move backwards. Vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim be'eretz Goshen ve'yachazu va v'yifru v'yirbu ma'od. That the Jewish people settled in the land of Egypt, in the land of Goshen, vayeachazu ba. How do you translate vayifru vayirbu ma'od? Means that they became very prosperous, right? Fruitful and multiplied in the land. How do you translate the word vayeachazu ba? The Art Scroll translates it, they acquired property in it, right? Vayeachazu of lashon, an expression of taking possession of. Ochez means to hold. Rav Schwab points out that that's not the right grammatical expression. If it meant to say, and they took possession, it should say, v'yochazu ba. That they took, what does v'yochazu ba mean?
They were held by it.
Exactly. V'yochazu ba means, and they were taken possession of by it. That's the meaning of the word v'yochazu ba. And we know the Medrash already points out, Vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim, right? What does Vayeshev mean? What is Vayeshev? Vayeshev is a lashon of permanence. It's an expression of settling. It's an expression of really dwelling. But we know that when Yosef told his brothers to come down, to turn back to page 254 after the great reveal, and he tells them quickly, you know, Pasuk Tes, the top of 254, Mem Hei Tes, 45:9, Maharu, go up quickly, Va'alu El Avi, go up to my father, Amartim Elav Ko'amar Bincha Yosef, Samani Elohim La'adon V'chol Mitzrayim, Ridai Elai Al Ta'amod, don't stay, V'yashavta Be'eretz Goshen, V'yisa Karov Elai, Atov V'necha V'nei V'necha, V'tzoncha V'karcha V'chal HaShaloch, you'll all be close to me, V'chilkalti Oscha Sham, Ki Od Chameshanim Rav, Pentivareish Atov V'escha V'chal HaShaloch, right? That I will support you for the next 5 years when there's going to be five more years of famine, right? Yosef's a dream interpreter. He knows it was 7 years of plenty. So far, there were 2 years of famine, and the famine was fierce. The famine was devastating. It affected the entire region, that people from Eretz Canaan have to come down to Egypt. That's the only country in the entire region that has surplus of food. And so Yosef's saying, come down here and I'll take care of you for the next 5 years. Meaning, how long were the Jewish people planning on going down for? Ostensibly, they were going down for 5 years, right? They weren't going down for a long time. But as the last pasuk tells us, v'yeach hazuba, that they took hold of the land. V'yeach hazuba means that they were taken hold of by it. They were taken hold of by the land. And that's the Lashon of Vayeshev. And that, of course, is the great challenge of Gullus. The great challenge of Gullus is recognizing of the exile. That means that as good as it is, this is ultimately a punishment. As good as it is, we don't belong here, right? That America is a wonderful, wonderful country, but this is ultimately punishment living here. Again, living in Eretz Yisrael, living in Israel, is certainly a better thing. Not to say that you're not in Gullus in Israel. In Israel, it's still in a state of exile, and that's really what happened in the Hanukkah story. One time, I was giving a shiur on this in Northern Jersey, and a fellow came up to me very disturbed after. You know, how could you say the Jews were in Israel and they were in Gullus? I'm like, what do you mean? That's the whole story of Hanukkah. It was the Greek exile, and they weren't in Greece. They were in Israel. They had a Beis HaMikdash, but they were in exile. He goes, well, you would probably say the Jews in Israel today are in Gullus. I'm like, they're not? He goes, how could you say that? I'm like, you see the Makom HaMikdash? He goes, yes. I'm like, no, you can't. There's a big gold dome on top of it. You can't see it. You can't see the place where the temple stood. It's a big gold dome where the temple stood. They're in exile there also, yes. But the challenge is that every Jew is supposed to be yearning to be there. Meaning that's the land where ultimately we can find our fullest expression as individuals and as a people. And, you know, very, very few are really of the opinion that we're not supposed to go there before the Messiah comes. You know, maybe if you're Satmar, maybe if you're Munkach. But most Jews, overwhelming majority of Jews, feel that you have an opportunity to go to the land of Israel. You're supposed to go to the land of Israel. That's ultimately where you're supposed to live. And that's something that we've discussed many, many times. The challenge that we have, the challenge of America, is not so much the challenge. We hope it's not the challenge. I mean, they arrested a guy in Toledo, Ohio. You saw that? A guy in Ohio was arrested because they found he was planning to shoot up a shul. And what did he want to do? His real goal? He wanted to kill a rabbi. Yes. That's like the chief of police told me. You know, Rabbi, I hate to say it, but you're like the number one target if someone comes in. I'm like, oh, wonderful. Great, thank you. Okay, excellent. And that's why I sit by the big glass that anyone right outside could just walk by with and go, boom, just take me out right there. Is that it, right? Thank you, chief. I'm like, yeah, you should do something about those numbers. Okay, shkoyach. Right. So I saw that today on the news. I'm like, oh, wonderful. You know, but America's gullus, right? We know it's a gullus. But the challenge of the gullus of America has not really been that challenge up until now of persecution. and fear, but it's a different challenge. It's a challenge that the Jews had in Egypt when they started off there. Ve'echazuba, the land grabbed hold of them. The land didn't let them go. And it's a challenge that we have, right? We all have our reasons. But we should be struggling with those reasons. We should be struggling and understanding that the greatest expression of who we are, who we can be, who our children can be, who we can be as a people, is not here. And that's something that the Jewish people then struggled with. And that's why, if you notice, that most of the time, whenever you have the end of a parsha, at the end of a parsha, you see, like, even the end of Miketz, that the whole parsha was a closed parsha. There are three samachs, right? At the end of one parsha before the next parsha, you always find those little samachs, or at the end of Vayeshev, it's three pays. That depends how much space you have between the beginning of one parsha and the other parsha. There are no samachs or pays at the end of Vayigash. You know why? Vayigash runs right into Vayechi. And Rashi, in the beginning of Vayechi, notes that why is it a closed parsha? But some point out, and you'll see what Rashi answers there, but some point out that it ends without any break because the Jewish people's eyes have like already been closed in exile. They're already like hook, line, and sinker. They're in Egypt. They're stuck there. And that's why there's no break. So that's the second idea. Second idea, as we enter, the long dark winter, we leave Hanukkah. We don't have Purim now for an extra month. We got to wait an extra month for Purim. We're just in the beginning of Teves, so we got to wait 3.5 months for Purim. What?
It's okay because I'm Pesach.
Who are you, Elisa Titan? What do you mean, Elisa Titan? We have to remember her for good, right? Maybe she's listening. Maybe Howard, you tell her we mentioned her. But yeah, don't worry. Yeah.
The Lashon that you were showing from the Pesach.
Yeah.
Vayashavta.
Right. So it could be that that's what Yosef was a Gullus Jew. Yosef had a certain perspective of what he wanted. But he clearly said that the purpose was just that I can get you through these 5 years. That's the idea. So that's second idea in the parsha. We'll go back. Let's go to a very famous episode also in this week's parsha, where Rashi has an interesting shot, and it's Mem Hey Yudalit. Mem Hey Yudalit again, 254, right there on that page, right? Vayipal Al Tzavarei Binyamin Achiv Vayev. That he falls on the neck of Binyamin, his brother, and he cries, meaning Yosef, and Binyamin cries on his neck. And what does Rashi say? Rashi tells us from the Gemara, there's a Gemara in Megillah, Tezayin Amid Beis. The Gemara in Megillah tells us, Rashi tells us, if you see the bottom, the right side, second line from the bottom, why is Yosef crying on the neck of Binyamin, his brother? Al shnei mikdasha shasidin lios b'chelkel shel Binyamin v'sofon lecharev. Yosef is crying over the two batei mikdash, over the two temples that were going to be in the portion of Binyamin, and they were eventually going to be destroyed. U'Binyamin bach al tzavarav. Why was Binyamin crying on Yosef's neck? Al mishkan shilo shasid lios b'chelkel shel Yosef v'sofon lecharev. That Binyamin was crying because the Mishkan, the movable tabernacle that was with them in the desert, and before the Beis HaMikdash, the temple was built in Jerusalem. We know it went through a few different places, but ultimately in Shiloh, where they created a semi-permanent structure, it wasn't the full Mishkan, it was a little bit of a composite of stone plus the Mishkan, and that was going to be in the portion of Yosef, and that ultimately was going to be destroyed. So why are they both crying about that now? Right? It's the famous question. Why? What forces Rashi to quote this Gemara? Rashi is always looking for pshat, right? So there's a very wild pshat. Again, looking for pshat, but I'm going to tell you something that's pshat on a very, very deep level. I don't know that that's pshat on the simple level, meaning he's coming to understand maybe the amkos of what Rashi is teaching us, the depth of what Rashi is teaching us. And he says that he heard this, Rav Schwab said he heard this from Rav Mordechai Pogromansky. Rav Mordechai Pogromansky was a fascinating, fascinating person. He, after the First World War, went into business, and he was not an old man. He was a young guy. He went into business. He got a contract importing paint, I believe it was, from Germany. He became a very successful businessman. And one of the rabbeim from Kelm, from one of the yeshivas, saw that he was very talented, that this was not a person that should be in business. He could be an unbelievable Rosh Hashiva. He could have a tremendous influence on people. And Rav Eliel Pian drew him away from business, but he went back to business and ultimately got him there. And he became a Rebbe. At first he was learning there for a while in Talmud Torah de Kelm, ultimately in Telz. And Rav Teitz, the quotes from Rav Teitz Atzal, who was learning in Telz at the time, that how this Rav Pogromansky was able to talk to people about deep ideas, and especially people that had philosophical issues with Judaism. And people think that in Europe at the time, everyone is so religious. There were people going off left and right in Eastern Europe, in Europe in between the two wars. And this Rav Mordechai Pogromansky had tremendous hashpah on people, tremendous influence. Rav Schwab, who learned in Telz, who learned in Lithuania, he had opportunity to learn from him. And he said he heard this idea from him. And it's based on a very interesting medrash. It's a pasuk that sounds familiar, and unfortunately we hear it at not good times. It's a pasuk from Yeshayahu, Chaf Hei, Umach HaShem Elokim Dima Me'al Kalpanim. What is that verse? It's normally said, you know where that verse is said? At the end of a eulogy. At the end of a eulogy, a person normally says, that God should wipe away, he should erase all the tears from all the faces. So there's a medrash that says that when Mashiach comes, all tears are going to be wiped away. All tears. What does that mean? May I call upon him from all faces. Not only tears that people cry when they're sad, but even tears that people cry when they're happy, those tears are also going to be dried up when Mashiach comes. Why is that? So Rav Pogromansky says, well, first tell me, why do people cry when they're happy? Why do people cry when they're happy? Again, this is a very deep idea. It's like what your son would hear where he's learning, right? This is a very deep idea. It sounds like a Shlomo Karlbach idea, but it's coming from like a Bal Musar, from Lithuania.
Usually it's unexpected, so maybe during time of Mashiach we'll understand everything. So there won't be any surprises.
Okay, that's one perspective. He has a little bit of a different, no, similar. You should know it's along the lines, but he says it a little bit differently. He says that where does Simcha come from? He quotes the pasuk in Tehillim Memches, chapter 48, Yifei Nof Misos Kala Aretz, talking about the Beis HaMikdash, that it's going to be the most beautiful sight, and it's going to bring Misos Kala Aretz, it's going to be the joy of all the land. And we know in Shir HaShirim, when Shlomo HaMelech writes, Ubiyom Simchas Libo, the day of his heart's greatest joy, that is Binyan Beis HaMikdash, the Medrash tells us. So the Beis HaMikdash is ultimately the source of all simcha. Of all true joy, it comes from the Beis HaMikdash. So when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the source of the truest simcha was taken away from this world. And instead, the world was filled with pain. And that's why when a person does experience simcha, does experience joy in this lifetime, without the Beis HaMikdash, he says it's like an island oasis in a sea of pain and tears. And when the joy becomes so great, that emotion overflows from the realm of joy into that ocean of tears. And that's why a person cries. When the joy becomes so great, you become so overwhelmed with the emotion, it overflows, and then it goes into that world of tears. And he said, so what happens is, according to this pshat, that all tears of joy come really, where do they really come from? Where do all tears of joy come from? they come from the lack of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? Shlomo Karlach said this all the time. He says, when your kids are crying, you know why they're really crying? Because they really want Mashiach, right? Sharon, no. It doesn't work, Sharon? Sometimes they want Mashiach. Sometimes. That's what it is, right? He says, whenever we cry, Shlomo says, whenever we cry, whatever we're crying about, we're really crying for the Beis HaMikdash. We're crying for God's glory to be revealed in this world. And he says, so that's why when Yosef and Binyamin are so overwhelmed and so overjoyed at their reunion, they're so overwhelmed that they start to cry. Where are those tears from? Rashi, the Gemara, is telling us those tears are really from Chorban HaBayis. Because otherwise a person wouldn't cry when they have such joy. And we know that when we talk about Simcha, what is Simcha? We've spoken about this many times. To really understand this pshat, we have to understand what another great Baal Musar said the essence of Simcha is. Simcha is not happiness. When we talk about joy, what is joy? Where is it from? It's really a sense of wholeness. Whenever we find Simcha in the Torah, it's really a sense of wholeness, a sense of completeness, and the emotional experience that comes from that feeling of wholeness. Right? When we talk about the Simcha of Chasan V'Kala, when we talk about the Simcha of Jerusalem being rebuilt, when we talk about the Simcha of the upper waters and the lower waters joining together, when we talk about the Simcha of V'Samach D'Lefnei Hashem Elokecha, of being in the state of joy in God's presence in Jerusalem for when you're there for the three pilgrimage festivals, what does that mean? It means that's when you uncover the deeper you. That's when you come to a sense of wholeness. So what Yosef and Binyamin are really crying about, Nia, the sense of Simcha, is from the sense of wholeness that they come to together. But ultimately, that sense of wholeness, it bleeds out into tears when we recognize that ultimately that wholeness is broken, right? And that's why, you know, at a wedding there's a custom that you put ashes on the head of the groom to remind the chasan and the kala, the bride and the groom, you remind them that at this moment of their greatest joy, their simcha is not complete, that their joy isn't complete, that the world is still broken. And that's what Rav Schwab wants to say pshat is in this, that's why there were tears. There were tears because the simcha was so great that when the simcha is so great, it taps into, without a Beis HaMikdash, your simcha can never reach that climax. Can never reach, so therefore your simcha, the greater it is, the more it will lead to tears. That's the pshat he'll say. Because the fullest expression of simcha is only when there's a Beis HaMikdash. Only when you can have the status of being Lefnei Hashem, really in front of God. And I know it's very deep. I know, way too deep for a Monday night now. But we'll end at the end of Hanukkah, right? Want to cry? It's Hanukkah's over. Hanukkah's never over, right? That's what we always say. The Gay Rebbe say it over. They say, why is there no Havdalah at the end of Hanukkah? Hanukkah never ends. Hanukkah never ends. You just got to take that light with you. That's why Purim also no Havdalah. You take it with you. That's why there's a minhag that you continue your Purim meal into the next day. To show that the Purim is continuing. It's a little bit late, but we want to end with one more idea. One more idea just to give us a little bit of a charge. Right? An idea that's a very simple idea, but a very beautiful idea and a very powerful idea that Rav Schwab talks about. And he says, he asks, you know, like, what happened to Yehuda? Right? And this is a famous idea, but the way he expressed it, I thought, was very sweet. He says that when you read the end of Parshas Miketz, Yehuda is like groveling to Yosef. He's groveling to Yosef. Page 248. Look at Pasuk Tezayin, the second to last verse. Vayomer Yehuda manomer ladoni manedaber manitzaktak Elohim matza es avon avadecha hinenu avadim ladoni gam anachnu gam asher nimsa gavia biyado. And the question is, Yehuda's groveling and he says, you know what? That God has found our sin. All of us will all be slaves to you. We'll all be slaves to you. Yosef says, no, only the one that has the cup in his hand will be. Everyone else can go up in peace to your father. All of a sudden, Yehuda comes vayigash a lashon, an expression of hagasha, of drawing near. Ki chamocha kefaro, you're like Pharaoh. And Chazal see in these words veiled threats, that all of a sudden this Yehuda that was groveling and who said, let us all be servants, including whom? Including Binyamin, right? All of us will all be slaves to you. That Yehuda that's groveling, you come to Parshas Vayigash and all of a sudden, oh, he's like ready to fight Yosef. He's ready to take on the viceroy. Ready to fight the king of Egypt. What happened? He was just groveling before. Please, you know, we'll all be slaves to you. No, Yosef says, no, only the one that has the cup. Everyone else goes up. So what happened? So it's a very famous answer, but he says that what happened was when Yosef tells him, no, only the one that has the cup in his hand, right? And in his hand, he'll be my slave. Everyone up, go up to peace to your father. What did Yehuda remember at that moment? He said that he took on a certain responsibility. What was the responsibility that he took upon himself?
To bring him back.
Meaning the verse before, he's saying, we're all going to be slaves. Was he going to bring Benjamin back then? No. They're all going to be slaves in Egypt. No Benjamin back. But when Yosef says, only he's going to stay, everyone else go up in peace to your father, it's like a trigger for Yehuda. Oh my gosh, in peace to my father. That's the one that I have to bring up. And all of a sudden, Yehuda realizes, you know what, I have a responsibility here. I have an achrayus. And Rav Schwab says, this is the power of accepting an achrayus upon yourself, of accepting a responsibility upon yourself. And he says that this is, you know, when a person takes on a Kabbalah. Kabbalah is like a New Year's resolution, but like much stronger, like a vow, like a real neder. Why would people take a neder? Why would people take a vow? If you don't fulfill it, it's like you violated an aveira. It's like a very serious thing. And he said, because there's a certain power that it gives you. When you accept upon yourself that extra responsibility also gives you what? Gives you extra kochos, gives you extra powers, and gives you extra abilities. You know, that's what some say. There's a famous idea that, you know, with every child, it brings more bracha into a family. It brings more blessing. What does that mean? What does that mean? It brings more bracha, meaning you have more responsibility. So Hashem has to give you more kochos. You have more responsibility, that means Hashem has to give you more kochos. You have more responsibility, so Hashem has to give you more what? Ability to deal with it. That's what it really is. And he says that this is the idea of being mekabel ol mitzvahs every day. Twice a day we're mekabel upon ourselves. What? The responsibility of being a subject to the king and to accept the king's laws. The responsibility to follow them. When? When we accept that? When we say Shema. When you say Shema every day, right? Everyone's supposed to say Shema every day, right? Lekulei Alma. Again, maybe not Chiv Daraisa, but not Torah law, but that certainly for men, maybe not for women. It's time-bound, but certainly many recommend that a woman also absolutely should at least say the first Pasuk of Shema. But the first Pasuk of Shema, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, is when you accept what upon yourself? Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemaim. That's when you accept the yoke of God's kingdom. That's when you say, I'm a loyal subject to the king. And if you say the second paragraph, Vayom Shamoa, that's when you accept upon yourself Ol Mitzvos, the yoke of I'm going to follow the king's commandments. I'm going to follow the king's laws. And he says, when you accept it upon yourself as a responsibility, when you tell Hashem, listen, I got this responsibility on me, what are you essentially telling Hashem, asking Hashem? I need your help. I need your help. I took this responsibility, and the person can tap into deeper kochos, deeper abilities, latent abilities, and draw them out. Draw them all out to be able to fulfill that responsibility. And he said, that's what happened to Yehuda here. His mom's groveling in front of Yosef. He's submitting himself. He's resigning himself to a fate as a slave for all of them. Again, even Binyamin is going to be a slave there, right? And then Yosef says, no. You all get up to go l'shalom el avichem, peace to your father. Only the one with the cup is staying here. Maybe it was the phrase shalom el avichem. Promise his father, I'll bring him back to you in peace. And all of a sudden, Yehuda's like, okay, he steps up. he steps up, ready to fight Yosef, ready to kill him. To the death of, what? What? You were just going to sell him? You were all just slaves. Because it reminded him of that responsibility, that achrayus that he had. And then we all take achrayus upon ourselves. When you take responsibilities on yourself, Hashem gives you the kochos. Hashem gives you the kochos. You know, it's what, it's one of the things, you know, many say that Zos Chanukah, the last day of Chanukah that we just had today, is really the end of Yom Noram. Yom Noram is finally over. Someone said to me, Rebbe, when's it over? When's it finally? I said, Zos Chanukah, it's done. I said, no other time, not Shovim. Zos Chanukah, Yom Noram is over. Done. Not Rosh Hashanah Rav, we're done. So now it's after Rosh Hashanah, we're done with Yom Kippur. Just now, we're walking away from Yom Kippur, right? So we know that there's a famous idea that how are you Zocha B'din? How does a person merit to have a good judgment on herself, on himself? What did Rabbi Yisrael Salanter famously say? To be an individual that the community needs. To be an Isha Tzibur Tzrichin Lo. When you're an individual that the community needs, when you have those communal responsibilities on your back, what does Hashem say? I'm going to give you the kochos. I'm going to give you the abilities to deal with all this. Right? I'm going to give you that responsibility. You have that. You have that responsibility on you, then you're going to be able to step up. But you have to feel it. You have to feel an achrayus. You have to feel a responsibility. You have to feel that all. You have to feel what you've accepted upon yourself and that you're committed to it and you're going to step up to it.
What? You should say that.
I'll let you say it. It's okay. Remember the intro to it. Remember the intro, Cheryl. But that's something that we should all feel. We should all feel responsibility, as we're all royalty. We're all b'nei malachim, b'nas malachim. We're all princes and princesses of the king. And it means we have responsibilities. We have responsibility to represent the king. We have responsibility to carry out the king's mission in this world. Kabel ol malchus shaddai. And Hashem should just help us, give us the kochos to carry these out and have the perseverance of the Jews in Galus not to get swallowed up by this land that has such allure, such nice bright lights, and understand where we really should be aspiring to.